before you start. Lord Jesus, we give thanks and we rejoice that we can gather together and to hear your word preached. We thank you for our brother Brett. Thank you that you have ministered to him over many years through your word, by your spirit. And we simply ask today that those two things, your word and your spirit combined in his life, would burst forth in love to bring about the ministry that you desire today for each one. Thank you that through Brett, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. And we ask that this would take place in fullness of what you desire today. Amen.
Thanks, Ollie. I'm just going to move this whiteboard, so just talk amongst yourself for a second. Good morning. It's good to be here this morning, as Ollie said, to meet together. I know I take it for granted at times, but it's a privilege that we can come and meet together. Every time I stand up the front here, I'm fixated on that post. And one of the reasons I'm fixated on that post is I did a job many years ago. And we were getting near the end of a renovation of a house, and the lady said, "I'm looking forward to the day you remove that post." And I said to her, "That post holds up the roof." And she said, "Well, it's not staying there." So after going through engineers and meetings, the post was removed. So that's why that post fixates me. As Ollie said, we're continuing our Christ and culture this morning. And the theme for today is success. Earthly success versus godly success. Some parallels, but some very differences as well. Earthly success and godly success do run parallel in many ways, but they also diverge in a lot of ways. And as we go through this morning, hopefully we'll be able to see the differences there. You may have heard this saying, it's an old saying, success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. What does that mean? Well, it means that we're very happy to take credit for success, but very few want to accept failure. And when I was looking at this, I thought about politicians. When politicians have something good to announce or a success, they're all lined up at the front of the podium with smiles on their faces, ready to say what they've done well and how well it's worked. When there's been a failure, or something gone wrong, there's one of them up the front. And he or she is unable to tell you who even made the mistake. So I think it's true, and it's probably true in our workplace as well. I'm sure we've all seen it throughout our working life. I can't say I've ever come across anybody who has said to me, "I want to be a failure." I've never had it said to me. You may have heard different, but it's never been said to me. I've never heard anyone say, "I set out on this venture and my objective was to fail." But you know, failing at times is part of life. It happens. It's what does happen in our lives. But it's normally not by intention or design. There's other reasons why we fail. During my primary school years and early high school, I wanted to become a professional sportsman. I'm just going to grab my water. Excuse me. I wanted to become a professional sportsman. That was my dream. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do that is I dislike being indoors. There's not many school children age here, is there? No. The reason I went to school was for recess, lunchtime and sport. They were the only reasons I was there, and other than my mother told me I had to go. But at lunchtime and recess, I'd play sport, and then I was greatly involved in sport during school, and then after school, I would do more sport. Because I didn't see much use for school other than that. And I wanted to make a living out of doing something that I really loved. And it was very appealing that I could have become a sports person and get paid to do it. Like, that was my dream. Imagine that, getting paid to do something you really loved. I would have loved to have been a successful sportsman, but it didn't happen. And there's various reasons why, and it was mainly due to I didn't have the talent at the end of the day. And one of the reasons that I really loved sport, as I said, was the outdoors. I did not want to have a job in an office. I wanted to be outdoors. So I did a trade as a carpenter, thinking that I would work outdoors. And I did enjoy that career, and I'm still involved in it now. Then I did become a builder, and now I spend too much time in an office. So that's what happens sometimes. In my early 20s, I started a building business, and Tracy and I think maybe we were nearly married, I think, when I started this business. And I drove myself very hard in that business. I worked long 6-hour days, long days, 6 days a week. And the main reason I did that was fear of failure. I didn't want to prove anything to anybody else, but I wanted to prove to myself that I was not a failure. And I drove myself very hard. I was desperate not to fail. I wasn't trying to prove anything to anyone else, as I said, and it wasn't about money either, but I did not want to fail. I was motivated to be successful. And looking back now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it probably did at the time, because I think I saw failure as the opposite of success. And as I said, I don't know anybody who wants to fail intentionally. If we did a survey in the main street of Hurstbridge, and went and asked this question, what does it mean to be successful? It'd be interesting to see what answers we would get, wouldn't it? I'm going to ask Tracy to come up now, because I'm going to ask you guys to take off your Christian cap or hat or attitude or whatever you want to call it, and I'll get Tracy to write up some things that you would think that we would get if we ask that question. Just yell them out and Tracy will write them. I can't talk and write and spell at the same time. There you go.
Just so adding money.
Money. See, this is why I'm not doing it. Recognition.
Thank you.
Yeah. I like that one. Followers. Happy family. I'm sure we could think of many more, but that'll probably do us at the moment. Oh, we're gonna. Tracy will be back up later to tell a story also, so. Well, 12 famous people throughout history were interviewed and asked to define success. And I'm going to read some of them for you. To many people, to measure how successful they are by how much money they make or by the people they associate with. In my opinion, true success should be measured by how happy you are. Now, these are quotes from famous people. Fulfillment is the major definition of success to me. It's about the difference you make in people's lives. If you carefully consider what you want to be said at your funeral, you should define that as success. To me, the definition of success is waking up in the morning with a smile on your face, knowing that it's going to be a great day. I was happy when I felt like I was successful when I was poor and living with six guys in a three-bedroom flat, sleeping on the floor. Success is liking yourself, liking what you do, and liking how you do it. Success is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. Success is going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. Now, they're all famous people. You probably know most of them. But that was the answers they gave to that question. When I look at the whiteboard here, I think there's nothing on there that's inherently evil, is there? They're all good in their own way with the right perspective. In fact, some of them are very good. But the problem is when they are put in front of what God asks us to be. When we prioritize these instead of God, that's when the problem arises. We need money to live. It's good to be happy. Nothing wrong with owning your own home. Knowledge is fine. A long life, health, they're all good things, aren't they? But we need to put them in perspective with how God would want us to. Money. Money is an interesting topic for Christians and non-Christians. It is a requirement to live in the Western world. And sometimes we as Christians find it difficult to put it into perspective. It's a tool that God gave us to use to further his kingdom. That's what it's about, really. It does not say anywhere in the Bible that money is evil. I know it's often quoted, but what it does say is the love of money is evil. And I think the reason it says the love of money is evil is because love can be blinding. The love of money can blind us to what it's all about. It gives us the wrong perspective on what it's for. When I was going through this and thinking about money, I remembered a story that happened many years ago. And I was at my previous church, and I was a deacon at the church at the time. And the elders, or the deacons at the time, were responsible for the building, the grounds, and finances. The elders looked after the spiritual content of the church. Well, the elders and the deacons decided we were going to have a retreat day. One of the elders had a property, and we went up there, beautiful gardens. We sat in the gardens, talked about the goings-on of the church and all the things that were involved with that. And when the deacons got together, one of the things that we believe God had put in our heart was to purchase the house next door to the church. Now, the church was in a residential street. We had a street frontage and railway land on two sides. So we had one neighbour, one house. So if the church ever needed or wanted to expand, we needed to expand in that direction. So on that day, we believe that God put in our hearts that we were to purchase that house if it came up for sale. It had come up for sale twice in about 60 years, to my knowledge. So that was on a Saturday. On the Sunday morning, I drove to church, and there was a sign out the front of that house that said, "For sale." I remember that day very well. And the reason I remember it well, I was thinking, this is awkward. How are we going to purchase a church with no money or little money? Because I was probably thinking, in 10 years' time, it won't be my problem. Someone else will have to sort out buying that house. Well, we did buy that house. We raised some funds and we purchased it. Now, we were a smallish church of middle-class people. We had a little bit of money in reserve, but not a lot. You know, in 18 months, we cleared the debt of that house. And the way we cleared it was a lot of generous people, but there was some people in the church whose circumstances brought about that they could make a very large donation. And we purchased that house. And as I said, we cleared that debt in 18 months. A mission organisation I do some work with were trying to get a semi-trailer for their disaster relief. And they were struggling to raise the funds, but a Christian family stood up and bought that for the organisation. A good friend of mine's father, who's a wealthy businessman, and a Christian, goes around paying for operations for people who can't afford it. Those people have the perspective of what money is all about. And I know it's easy to get caught up in it's ours and it's not God's, but it is God's and He's given it to us to use wisely. As I said, having money is not a bad thing, but it's the love of money that's the problem. And as I said, these people understood the value of money. Money and possessions are mentioned 2,000 times or more in the Bible. So God knew that it would be a challenge for people to deal with. He knew that it would not be easy for us to deal with this. In Proverbs 37:9, this is what it says. "Two things I ask of you, Lord. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me." This is the interesting part of it. "Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much and disown you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal and dishonour the name of the Lord." I think those verses give us a good perspective of what the value of money should be in our life. But one of the pitfalls of living in a consumer society is comparing my life to my neighbour, my friend, my family. And because Satan is the great deceiver, that's what he wants us to do. He wants us to be unsatisfied with our lot in life, our possessions, our car, our house is old and small, my neighbour has just got a new car. We went to Queensland for a holiday, other people went to Disneyland. You know, it can be a downhill spiral to be dissatisfied. And Satan knows that by distracting us with this, that we shift our focus from the heavenly to the earthly. We become consumed by the earthly and forget about the heavenly. The challenge is we are surrounded by the earthly in possessions, but we need to put our focus on the things above. We can spend so much time and effort on these earthly things to the detriment of the heavenly things. And it can be so subtle, can't it? Because there is nothing wrong, as I said, with a house, possessions, an overseas holiday. There is nothing wrong with those things in God's eyes. But when we make them our God, that is the problem. I'm not a social media user, but people tell me out there that that is a whole other world of how you can go about feeling bad about your life. I'm not involved because it doesn't interest me, but I do know people that tell me that's what it's about in places. So what does a successful life look like in God's perspective? When I was looking at success, I honestly thought, I think this will be reasonably easy to come up with a definition. But it's a little more difficult than I thought. But the reason I chose it is, Tracy's going to come up in a second and tell a story about an encounter we had with a person recently that fits in with this well. Thank you.
So we recently had the privilege, I suppose, to travel from Darwin to Melbourne. We've done a little bit of travelling in Central Australia, and there are some very, very, very long stretches of road with nothing in between. And occasionally, you see a person on a bike by themselves in the middle of nowhere riding along, which we are always like super intrigued by. Like, where have they come from? Like, no support cars, nothing. Anyway, so this trip, we were almost at Alice Springs, and Brett says to me, did you see the guy on the side of the road? And I was actually reading a book, so I didn't. And he had seen a guy walking along with a sort of trailer cart thing on four wheels that he was pushing. So we were just like, okay, wow, that's next level, walking rather than on a bike. And the next day we're in Alice Springs and had to go to Bunnings, as you do. And as we were walking back to the car, we see the guy and his trailer. Brett's straight over. I'm assuming he was like going, I want to understand what his motives are, who he is, what was going on. So he proceeded to tell us his name was Stephen, and he had walked from Queensland. I'll just let that sink in. We're in Alice Springs. And he had been on the road since... Has this stopped working or is that just me? No. Since 2016. He had been in a car accident and received like an acquired brain injury, which had caused him to lose his family and all, like his livelihood, everything he had. He'd recovered okay physically, but not financially. And he said the only thing that kept him going was his spiritual faith. So at this point, I'm thinking, please let that be in Jesus. So I'm listening to him talk, trying to kind of wait for that opportunity to say, who is your faith in? He had the best dreadlocks I'd ever seen and was wearing a kind of caftan-y thing. So I'm thinking it's probably not Jesus, but, you know, I was, yeah, waiting. But I didn't have to wait that long because pretty quickly he started talking about Jesus. And so we shared with him that we had a strong faith in Jesus too. He shared how he had grown up in New Zealand, not in a Christian family. His stepdad had at one point burnt everything he owned that had anything Christian about it, T-shirts, books, Bibles, whatever. So he obviously hadn't even started off with an easy life. He found his way to a church, and he obviously had had a very solid upbringing in a church in New Zealand because his theology was unbelievable. And yeah, everything this guy owned in the world was in this cart. Nothing. He didn't even have a mobile phone, nothing. And he lived day to day relying on Jesus and sharing his faith with people that he met along the way. That was his entire focus of his life. we told him we'd pray for him. He pulled out his Bible, wrote our names in the front, and said he would pray for us. He said he had prayed that morning that God would send ravens to feed him because he was feeling a little bit low. So he thanked us for being the ravens. Brett and I were honestly blown away. Brett asked if we could pray for him, so we all bowed our heads in the Bunnings car park and prayed. Hilariously, Brett said he'd like to give him some money, opened his wallet and gets out $5. I'm like, right, that's all you ever have in your wallet. What did you think would happen? So luckily I did. We literally got in the car and just looked at each other and went, what the heck just happened? Like, he was just one of those people, like, we're even thinking, is he an angel? Like, he was just one of those people you meet in your life that you, yeah. He had absolutely nothing. He had a jerry can for his water and bits and pieces, and he obviously just sleeps on the side of the road when you're in those long stretches where there's no towns. But he had just challenged and encouraged us on so many levels about what we were doing in our lives and to live your lives with more purpose and more love that we were just, yeah, blown away, weren't we? He was, yeah. So that's our story.
I thought I'd get Tracy because she had a better memory of that thing. I was sort of, my head was spinning after that encounter with this man. And he has no earthly success other than what he can fit in a thing the size of three wheelbarrows. But he's probably one of the richest men I've met in my life. He was. He could not contain his love for God. It was uncontainable, like it just spilled out of him. But he was so excited to tell people about Jesus. Like, when I went up to him, because I thought, I need to know what his story is, because I had no idea. But I saw him in Bunnings talking to a man, and when I said, what are you doing here? And he said, oh, there was a brother in there who needed to hear about Jesus, so I had to go in and tell him. Thinking, rightio, you know. But yes, none of the trappings of earthly success. So many trappings of heavenly success. If you'd like to open your Bibles to Matthew 25, 14 to 30. This is a parable, and in my Bible it's called the parable of the loaned money. Matthew 25, 14 to 30. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey. He called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. Well, his master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went and out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked and lazy servant, So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. To summarise this parable very briefly, God has given each of us a talent or talents, and when he returns, we need to give an account of what we've done with those talents. Every one of us, bar none. And the account we'll need to give is, did we use those talents to glorify him and further his kingdom? So how does success fit with this? I believe we should want to say, I want to be a successful Christian. It sounds, I don't know, a bit jarring in one way, but I do believe that's what we should want to say. I want to be a successful Christian. That should be the Christian's desire. We should want to be successful, but not for our own glory. It's not about us to be successful. It's about him and his kingdom and his glory. None of us receive more gifts or talents than we can handle. God determines this. So we cannot say to God, too much was expected of me. And we cannot become overwhelmed. God gives us time. He gives us gifts, passions, desires, relationships, circumstances, and an abundance of resources according to our abilities. The expectation from God is that we use them. And we use them wisely until he returns. God did not give me the gift to pastor a church. There's a church out there that's very happy about that, I can tell you. God did not give me the gift of worship leading like Colleen. And I'm not going to prove that to you either. But he's given different gifts to different people. And it's not about the gifts we have. It's about using those gifts. It's not whether what God gives you to steward in life. It won't look exactly the same for all of us. It's not how big it is. It's not how impactful it is or how famous you may become by it. Make the most of the gift that God gives you. And it may not further your purpose in the outside world in any way, shape or form. In fact, people may look at you and think you're a little crazy, but that's the way it will be. He entrusts this to us. It's a gift that he gives us. Generally speaking, through his word, first and foremost, is how he speaks to us. Then specifically for individuals, the Spirit will lead for clear direction. That approach to life leads to praise and reward from God in eternity, and that success is what is in God's eyes. Where you wrestle with the feeling of success may involve creativity, or it may not, but the point is this. The eternal significance of what we do in life is found in the simple act of obedience to God. God leads us to do not in those things that have, it's not what they evolve into, but God wants our obedience first. I was reading about a missionary, a guy who was in the early 1800s, went to Myanmar. And he was there 12 years before his first convert. 12 years. But the ramifications of that are still going on today. There are churches and people, and they celebrate the day in his name because of what happened. Yet he didn't get to see the fruits of that, but he was obedient. Sometimes at this point in the sermon, I sit there at times and my mind wanders to the place of, what extra do I have to do next week? Well, there's good news. If you are using your gifts and talents that God gave you, keep doing it. In fact, if you are doing that, there may be things in your life that you need to get rid of. You may be spending time doing things that are not necessarily bad, but maybe you need to get rid of those things to focus on the things that God has given you to do. Then there's those who have buried their talent in the backyard. Well, you need to go and dig it up. It's not yours. It's a gift that God gave you. He didn't give it to you to go and bury it. He gave it for you to bless the people here, glorify him, and further his kingdom. And I can tell you something, if you've buried your talent, you are doing more work keeping that talent buried than you'll ever do by utilizing it. It plays on your mind, doesn't it? It eats away at you. You need to go and dig up that talent and use it for God. That's what he wants you to do. If you buried your talent out of fear, you need to overcome that fear. Remembering that God gave you this gift, knowing that you are capable of using it. As I said, he did not give me the gift of pastoring a church or leading worship. So I don't have to worry about that I can't do it. But he has given me other gifts that I need to use and utilize. The other reason that we may have buried our talent is we don't trust God. We are saying to God, I know you have given me this gift, but I think you got it wrong. I think you've made a mistake. Well, if you think that, you need to go and speak to somebody to sort that out. Because there's no better place to live your life than in the will of God. It's joyful, it's fulfilling, it's a fruitful place to live. Not always easy. It can be very challenging, but it is the place to live. Everything that we have has been given to us by God. And on the day when we depart earth, only the things that we have done with an eternal perspective will have any value. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and vermin destroy and thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. A friend of mine often says to me when we talk about possessions, you never see a hearse towing a trailer. You take nothing with you from this earth. There's nothing, your greatest possession on earth does not go with you once you depart earth. Everything comes from God. Our time, our talents, our ability to work and earn money. We are not self-made, despite what we may think. It all comes from God. I know some people here take notes each Sunday. I admire your discipline. If you rely on your memory rather than notes, try this week to remember this. Everything belongs to God. Each day, each possession, everything. He gave us, every one of us, a talent or talents. Do not waste it. do not waste it. You can live your life with the talent buried in your backyard. And I just ask that if that's your case, please do something about it. I'm going to hand over to the music guys now.